Chapter 4. Who would have the sorry courage? Every myth, every legend reflects, as shown by science, a state or a real event. And so, to our great surprise, we find knowledge embedded in myths, albeit enciphered, but not to be doubted, which early humans could not have acquired. This quote comes from the ethnologist Karl Kohlenberg, who as long as 50 years ago was conducting comparative research into myths and reached the baffling conclusion, something is not quite right here. Why do Stone Age cultures that lived thousands of kilometers distant from one another and had no contact report related stories? Where do the conspicuous common elements originate? The very influential French classicist and ancient historian Professor Pierre Grimal, 1912-1996, defined myth as chronologically disordered history. At their core, the original events had been preserved, but frequently not in the correct causal context, and furthermore, in a wrong time. Somewhere, out there in indefinable space, chaos ruled. The world had not yet been created. Many of the oldest traditions start with this idea. Our ancestors could not imagine the origin of the universe. Are we better informed today? Someone created order in this chaos. Who? Where does this someone come from? The Greek poet Homer has Gaia arise, and she in turn gives birth to Uranus, the starry heavens. The Old Testament places chaos at the beginning. Then God enters stage right and creates order. He creates light, then water, land, vegetation, then the creatures of the sea, birds, and finally, cattle and creeping things and beasts of the earth. Genesis chapter 1, verse 24. And on the sixth day, as the crowning glory of creation, the human being. How actually did the scribes of thousands of years ago know about the obligatory course of biological evolution? Human beings were not simply placed there as finished creatures. Before them, there had to live other creatures. Before them, in turn, sea creatures. That was only possible if land and water were first separated and an energy source, the sun, shone in the sky. The sequence is correct. In Greek mythology, things are more confusing. The starry heavens, Uranus, produce the 12 Titans, male and female giants with immense strength. Their names are Oceanus, Cius, Crius, Hyperion, Iapetus, Cronus, Thea, Rhea, Themis, Mnemosyne, Phoebe, and Tethys. They begat children, and those in turn children. Thus were created Helios, the sun god, and Selene, the moon goddess. Cronus begat Poseidon and Zeus. There was war in the universe, and on Earth, Zeus fought against the dragon-like monster Typhon. Zeus finished the beast off with a lightning bolt. How else? This Zeus, Latin for Jupiter, is described by Homer as the father of all gods and humans. He gives earthly kings their power. Zeus is also the designer of a robot called Talos. This Talos circled the island of Crete several times a day and shot down anything that had no business on the island. Zeus is also the father of Apollo, and he, in turn, is the teacher of young humanity. Apollo's main place of residence on Earth was Delphi, the location of the schools of wisdom and the oracle. Delphi lies at the center of an incredible geometrical network that already existed in antiquity and was set up by gods of some kind. Apollo, of course, possessed a heavenly chariot. He used it to fly each year to the land of the Hyperboreans, which lay behind the north wind, but also over the ship Argo with its crew, the Argonauts. All human fantasy, fire-breathing dragons, fights in space, flying machines, robots. Another of Zeus's sons was called Ares, Latin for Mars. He was a warlike being who was always in the company of Phobos and Deimos, fear and terror. Phobos and Deimos are still the current names of the two moons of Mars, with their impossible orbits. They are definitively the strangest moons in our solar system. They orbit Mars in almost circular trajectories over the equator, and they do so faster than Mars below them is rotating. Our astronomers say the two bodies are fragments from space that were once captured by Mars. This view has some snags. Both moons of Mars rotate in almost the same plane over the equator of Mars. One fragment might do that by chance. Two is stretching things. In our time, several satellites have approached the moons of Mars and provided some quite good pictures. They are potato-like fragments with various craters from strikes. At a distance of 165 miles, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter also photographed a strange monolith-like object with a clear rectangular shadow. Buzz Aldrin, the second man on the moon, said, "There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once every 7 hours." Next to the craters, parallel stripes have also been photographed on the surface. That is why the attempt was made to fly past Phobos and Deimos at a lower level. But no satellite from Earth reached its target. Our earthly probes went blind before they could transmit their images to Earth. Now we have two potatoes with craters, but we know as little about the inner life of these small celestial bodies as we do about their orbit. In the autumn of 1972, the then most famous Soviet astronomer, Yosef Shklovsky, at the Sternberg Institute in Moscow, told me, "I suspect that the two moons of Mars are hollow. Their orbits are not natural." Furthermore, the craters raise additional questions. It is generally known that debris from space strikes planets that do not have a protective atmosphere, in which at least the smaller lumps would burn up. But why on such midgets like Phobos and Deimos? God knows the two don't possess the gravity of planets or larger moons. It is difficult to avoid the impression that at one time an incredible barrage of rocks flew through our solar system. From where? What was the cause? Star wars, like the one fought by Zeus and others? And was Ares, the son of Zeus, who created the Martian moons Phobos and Deimos, not a god of war? Aphrodite, Latin for Venus, and Hermes, Latin for Mercury, were children of Zeus. People ascribed fantastical stories to them. Yet the origin of all these myths remains shrouded in obscurity. The root of the Greek word mien, myth, contains the meaning of mysterious. What Homer wrote about the gods was, in his time, already the result of a very long development. The gods were superhuman in the eyes of people, and yet they were similar to human beings. They lived in a kind of non-earthly state. They did not eat human food, but ambrosia, the heavenly food, and drank nectar, the heavenly drink. The gods were imagined to be omniscient and omnipotent, and yet there are things they don't know about what is happening in their immediate surroundings. They were also similar to humans in their form, just more beautiful and of more noble appearance. They either reveal themselves to humans in their true shape, or they transform themselves into human beings. So far, the gods possess exceptional characteristics. They come from space. They are superhuman, but of human form. They are technically far advanced of us, flying machines, robots, lightning weapons, Martian moons. They do not eat terrestrial food. Their shape is more beautiful than ours. They can transform themselves. And where do humans come from? In almost all the traditions, they were created by heavenly beings. Greek myth reports that Prometheus, a son of the Titan Iapetus, had descended from heaven to earth. The word Prometheus means forethinker. This Prometheus possessed the knowledge of the gods, and he also knew how the seed of heaven could be transplanted to earth. So he took clay on earth, wet it, and created a form out of it in the image of the gods. Prometheus took the good characteristics of the animals and enclosed them in the human breast. Animal characteristics are said to have been transferred to humans. Does there not resonate a primordial memory of an artificial mutation? Changes to the base sequence in the DNA molecule? The first humans, so Greek mythology tells us, did not understand anything about their surroundings. They walked about like phantoms. They knew neither art nor technology. Then Prometheus attended to these creatures. He taught them to observe the rising and setting of the celestial bodies, invented the art of counting for them, writing, but also shipbuilding, and taught human beings with regard to all other circumstances of life. Prometheus also instructed human beings in astronomy, metallurgy, and all kinds of sciences. Other authors, some of them unknown, reported the same about that incomprehensible period. Diodorus of Sicily, Diodorus Siculus, for example, the historian from the first century before Christ, traveled the world for 30 years and visited all the libraries of antiquity. His historical work comprises 40 volumes. In the second volume, he writes that the first humans had literally learned everything from the gods, be it astronomy, metallurgy, road or house building, the art of writing, the healing arts, and whatever else. All of this must have happened in a very early time, because it was the gods who taught human beings not to eat one another. When were our ancestors still cannibals? Prometheus is also the one who brought fire to human beings. To do so, he took a long stalk of giant fennel, held it against the passing chariot of the sun, and in this way set the fennel alight. And soon the first fires were burning brightly on earth. The supreme god, Zeus, saw this as treachery. He had poor Prometheus chained to a cliff on Mount Caucasus. In Christian Jewish mythology, Lucifer starts a fight in heaven and resists the command of God with his armies. Lucifer is cast out of heaven and brings fire to earth. Lux fare is Latin for making fire. Are all of them just silly stories? Myths? 140 years ago, the highly respected philologist Professor A. Volheim, who had studied the ancient traditions that had been handed down, wrote, "Anyone who sees myths as just nonsensical tales and nice allegories has no idea of their importance. The myth is something quite different. It is the most sublime expression of the most sublime truths. Furthermore, it is also the primordial history of humanity." Polynesia lies a long, long way from Greece. We understand it to mean the approximately 50 million square kilometers of Oceania from Hawaii in the north to New Zealand in the southwest and Easter Island in the southeast. All of it is Polynesia, dreamily called the South Seas in popular parlance. This island world is awash with ancient traditions, which, how could it be any other way, basically communicate the same content as in Greece. The creation story of the Maori in New England tell about the creator god. Io breathed in infinite space. The universe was in darkness. There was no glimmer from below of clarity, of light. Like everywhere else, Io began to make light, create water and earth, then animals, and finally the first pair of humans. They were images of the cosmological primeval gods, created in their image. The inhabitants of the Marquesas Islands do not know anything different. They lie south of the equator, 1,600 kilometers northeast of Tahiti. Politically, the Marquesas Islands belong to French Polynesia. In the beginning, the cosmos was in high heaven. Tananoa lived in heaven. There was no voice, there was no music. Nothing living moved. There was no day, there was no night. There was only blackness, black darkness. On the island of Samoa, the primeval god, who of course came from the cosmos, was called Tagaloa. Like everywhere else in Polynesia, the emptiness of the universe is first described. There was only chaos, no light, no earth, no land, no sea, nothing on which something could grow. He had come from the infinitude of space, the great Tagaloa. He had set lights over the earth, one for the day, another for the night. He had created land and water. Then he sowed the seed and created fish, as well as animals, on land. There are, so the tradition of the native inhabitants of Samoa says, 9 different heavens, and all of them are inhabited. Tagaloa appointed rulers over the different heavens, but also messengers between the heavens. Then Tagaloa, the creator, spoke to Tagaloa Lifuli, "Come here, I appoint you chief of the heavens." Then Tagaloa, the creator, spoke to Tagalos Savali, the messenger, "Come here, you shall be messenger between all the heavens, starting with the 8th heaven to the 1st heaven. They shall all gather in the 9th heaven where Tagaloa Lifuli rules." We learn that many stars are inhabited, but that is also what it says in many other original traditions. I will come back to that. In the creation story of Hawaii, there are even 3 creator gods, Kane, Ku, and Lono. Each has different characteristics, but without exception, they all came from space. And the wandering stars and the inhospitable stars and the wandering stars of Kane, innumerable are the stars, the large stars, the small stars, the red stars of Kane, O infinite cosmos, the large moon of Kane, the large sun of Kane, turning, moving in the immensity of the cosmos, and they created the human being in the image of Kane. Not one of these myths reached Polynesia through the white conquerors. It was not the Christian priests who taught the native inhabitants their knowledge. All traditions existed before. Jesus or other figures of Christian belief do not exist in the wide space of the Polynesian creation myth. Neither do any figures from the Old Testament, such as Abraham or Moses. The ancient stories were told for X generations before there was contact with whites. And everywhere the stories begin with the endless cosmos. A god or some gods move in the blackness of the universe. There was neither above nor below, neither light nor shadow. The gods spent a very long time in this blackness until they were finally touched by the light of a sun. The path of the gods to earth is described in more detail in the traditions of Kiribati. Kiribati is the collective name for a group of islands that stretch north and south of the equator. The islands belong both to Micronesia and Polynesia. 35 years ago, I spent several days in the astonishingly well-stocked library of Bairiki, a village on the main island of Kiribati. There, I studied the legends literally on site. At the beginning, a long, long time ago, there was the god Nareu. No one knows from whence he came, who his parents were, because Nareu flew alone and sleeping through space. In sleep, he heard his name being called 3 times, but the caller was nobody. Nareu awoke and looked around. There was nothing but emptiness. But when he looked down, he saw a large object. It was Te Bomate Maki, meaning earth and sky together. Nareu's curiosity led him to descend and carefully set foot on Te Bomate Maki. There were no living creatures there, no animals, no humans, just him, the creator. 4 times he circumnavigated the world he had found from north to south, east to west, and he was alone. Finally, Nareu dug a hole in Te Bomate Maki, filled it with water and sand, mixed both into rock, and ordered the rock to give birth to Nareu Te Kikitea. Thus, on instruction of the creator, Nareu Te Kikitea was created, meaning Nareu the wise. Nareu the creator now ruled over Te Bomate Maki, while Nareu the wise was in the earth. Then Nareu the wise created the first beings endowed with reason. And when the work was done, Nareu the creator said, "Enough, it is done. I go, never to return." And no one knows where he has been since then. This ancient body of thought can be reasonably reinterpreted from today's perspective. Someone is flying alone and sleeping through space until he is woken by a voice who was nobody. An astronaut lies in deep sleep. An onboard monitoring system registers a solar system with planets. The astronaut is woken by the computer, a nobody. Below him, namely where there is the gravity of a celestial body, he notices a large object, the Earth. Once again, in full command of his faculties, the pilot decides to land on the alien planet. Nariu stretched his limbs. He wanted to know what kind of object it was. He descended and carefully set foot on it. Next, the astronaut flies around the new planet from east to west and from north to south. He finds no sign of life and decides to plant the seeds of life. At that time, there were not yet any spirits nor any human beings, but only mighty Nariu. He went 4 times around the world and determined that there was no life. The myth cannot tell by what means Nariu made life flourish. Perhaps the processes were too confusing to be understood. Nariu dug a hole in the earth and filled it with sand and water, mixed both into rock, commanded the earth to give birth. Thus, Nariu the Wise was created. The characterization, the Wise, could stand for spirits, being ensouled, or living. Where previously there was emptiness, life now begins to sprout. Now 2 elements of creation are at work, Nariu the creator of all existence and Nariu the wise, for the start of terrestrial development. Nariu the creator was now above Te Bamatemake, while Nariu the wise was in the earth. I have noticed a small difference between the principal god of Kiribati and the other super-gods. Nariu went, never to return. Other divinities, Osiris, Egypt, Quetzalcoatl, Mexico, Gezer, Tibet, Nomo, Mali, and so on, expressly promised to return. One island chain in the South Pacific is the New Hebrides. The native inhabitants of Malekula, one of the islands, tell that a long time ago, Barakulkul had come from heaven with 5 of his brothers. They did so in a coconut which opened by itself. This accords with the story from the Fiji Islands, for there the first humans emerged from a shiny egg which the cloud serpent Ndenge had thrown to earth. For the Micronesians, heaven and earth were connected by ropes a long time ago. On one occasion, the brothers Tawhaki and Karihi went to visit heaven. So they went to the place where the ropes were hanged down from heaven. One of the brothers managed, by this means, to reach the heavenly realms. And one of the Hawaiian gods, Lono by name, left earth in a cloud ship. He did so with the express promise to return in the far distant future. The same applies to the youths Punifanga and Tafaliu, both from Samoa, who were born up in the smoke of a mighty fire. This immediately reminds us of Quetzalcoatl, Kukulkan, the feathered serpent of Central America. Be it the Maya, the Aztecs, or still earlier, the Olmecs, all of them were familiar with the feathered, winged serpent that came from heaven and from which the original teachers emerged. Professor Johannes Andersen, probably the foremost authority on all myths of Polynesia, author of a 500-page work on them, notes, "There are innumerable cosmological variants on the origin of the ancestral parents. The expanses of space are mentioned multiple times, and the infinitude of the universe." Not actually a surprise, one might think, for the South Sea Islands are tiny specks in the expanses of the Pacific Ocean. The native peoples stared upward each night, observed the course of the stars, and were lost in their reveries. But why did they think up the same, or at least similar, creation stories to the people in Egypt, Sumer, America, Australia, or China? Psychologists such as C.G. Jung developed the idea of a common archetypal consciousness. Even if such an archetypal consciousness existed, where did it start? After all, even this archetypal consciousness had to start in a brain. Through which inspiration, influences, experiences? I keep having to point out in my lectures and books that these archetypal memories cannot be events from nature. Why not? Stone Age people experienced natural disasters of all kinds. earthquakes, eclipses of the sun, volcanic eruptions, thunder and lightning. They gave rise to the first nature religions. But the gods who came from the stars are not comparable because they supplied information. They acted as teachers. They instructed human beings in many fields of the sciences and technology. This is told by all historians of antiquity. No force of nature takes humans up to heaven into the spaceship and instructs them as follows. Son of human beings, look outside. Do you see that small light out there? You humans call it the moon, but the moon does not have light of its own. It draws its light from the sun. Then the person is told about the phases of the moon, and about the course of the stars, and the earth around the sun, including leap hours. It can be read up in the Book of Enoch, chapters 72 to 75, and so on. And all this happened in the Stone Age, because Enoch was the seventh patriarch before the flood. No nature religion will help us further. No lightning, no thunderstorm, and no earthquake. Scientific facts were communicated. Often variants of the same myths were handed down by the same peoples, which should not come as a surprise. These traditions were handed down before there was writing. Stories were probably told through an endless relay from tribe to tribe, family to family, until it finally became possible to set them down in writing. The core, nevertheless, remained the same. One of the Samoan legends tells about the god Tagaloa. God Tagaloa lived in the universe. He created everything. He was alone. There was no heaven and no land. There was no water, no rock, neither sea nor earth. His original name was Tagaloa Fa'atupu'tupu'nu'u, which means origin of growth. As elsewhere, this primordial god creates the sun, then land, water, fishes, land animals, and as the pinnacle, human beings, in the right sequence. This is described in the following way. Then Tagaloa spoke to the rock, and Luau, the boy, came out. Then Tagaloa spoke again to the rock, and Luavai, a girl, stepped out. Tagaloa brought both of them together. Then Tagaloa made the spirit, the heart, the will, and the thinking. Then, said Tagaloa, may the spirit, the heart, feelings, the will, and the thinking come together in human beings. And they combined, and human beings were intelligent. The gods were always involved in the creation of human beings. Yet as far as I am aware, not a single one of the creation myths reports that human beings had descended from the apes, or that some heavenly being had formed the human being out of the chimpanzee. Oh yes, there is often talk of liaisons between gods and humans, but not between humans and apes. Often the people of Polynesia linked their ancient stories with specific geographical locations. Thus the ancient temple of Te Mahara on the island of Raivave, French Polynesia, is today still deemed to be the location where the god Maui landed after his space flight. The native inhabitants of Ati'ona, one of the islands in the Marquesas group, say the same. The small mountain Ke'ani is considered to be a sacred place, although there is no structure there. The mountain was originally called Mauna Tuatini Etwa, which literally means mountain on which the gods landed. And, of course, why should it be any different? The South Sea Islanders erected temples in honor of their heavenly teachers. These rectangular structures are called marae, and they can be seen on many Polynesian islands. The Marae To'o'arae on Tahiti is a regular 9-stepped pyramid. The one in Raiatea, French Polynesia, a rectangle made of monoliths. And even on the small island of Bora Bora, which has a circumference of merely 14 kilometers, there are several, although smaller, marae. Nowhere did I find sculptures chiseled into the stone. no depiction of the gods, such as, for example, on the Maya pyramids in Mexico. Just simple terraces or platforms in memory of and as waiting rooms for the gods. Reinhard Habeck, a thoroughly honest researcher and author of many books on the subject of extraterrestrials, refers to a cowshed of God in an article for the magazine Ancient Skies, currently Sagenhafte Zeiten. This is a circular wooden building constructed by a Dinka tribe in Upper Sudan. Despite having a large diameter of 12 meters, the roundhouse is empty. It serves as a sacred site in honor of a god called Mayual, who is said to have ascended to heaven from this site. Many peoples honored their gods in places that later became sacred sites. This is what happened to a majority of the gigantic temples of antiquity. They arose everywhere that the gods were once active. The oldest Maya city of Tikal is located in what is Guatemala today, but it was only founded because the ruler of the heavenly family had once descended here. This is what is inscribed on a small Mayan plate, the so-called Leiden plate, which is today kept in the Museum of Leiden in the Netherlands. Another of these ancient locations, 20 kilometers east of the Euphrates, south of Baghdad, Iraq, was called Uruk. Biblical Erech, Greek Orkoi, Roman Orkoi. Today it is Warka. Uruk existed as long ago as the 4th century before Christ, and is the location where the oldest writings were found, including the Sumerian texts Bilgamesh and Akka, not Gilgamesh. The cuneiform script tells about a temple built in honor of An, who has descended from heaven. The structure was erected where a cloud spread over the earth, where a start was made from earth, where the magnificence of An started from the earth. The god Enlil and the heavenly goddess Inanna originally resided in Uruk. They maintained the bond between heaven and earth. The geographical space in which the incomprehensible occurred is a glob on the globe. Mesopotamia, the home territory of the earlier Chaldeans, the Sumerians, and the Babylonians, is only an hour by plane from Egypt. That is why a brief link with my book, Evidence of the Gods, is appropriate here. In the pyramid texts of Unas from the 3rd dynasty, researchers keep encountering verses, so-called utterances, in which the pharaoh literally flies in a heavenly bark. Utterance 267. A stairway to heaven has been set up for me so that I can ascend to heaven. And I climbed up on the smoke of the large vessel. I fly high as a bird and light as a beetle on the empty throne of your bark, O Ray, and I am permitted to sit on your seat and thunder across heaven, O Ray. I am permitted to lift off the land in your bark. Utterance 434. You have helped every god who possesses an own bark, so that they set themselves up in the starry heavens. Utterance 584. The doors of the which are in the firmament were opened for me. The metal doors which are in starry heaven lie open for me. There are many of these verses, but our confused zeitgeist turns them into wishful thinking. The priests had imagined journeys of the pharaohs after death. This is nothing but scientifically misunderstood nonsense. Our busy Egyptologists are not aware of the links with ancient India. There, too, the leaders of humanity are ferried about in flying vehicles, so-called vimanas. The following extracts are a few examples. Faster, Matli, spoke Indra. Be quick with my heavenly chariot. Matli steered the chariot, which gleamed like a sunbeam, to the place where Rama encountered his enemies. Take this heavenly chariot, Matli called out to Rama. Dressed in heavenly materials, Rama mounted the chariot and threw himself into battle such as human eyes had never seen before. While Kelki is still speaking, two chariots descend from heaven, gleaming like the sun, made of gems of all kinds, moving by themselves, protected by incandescent weapons. So the king sat down in the heavenly chariot. They reached the expanse of the firmament. The heavenly chariot flew around the earth, over the oceans, towards the city of Avanti, where a festival was just being held. After a short stopover, the king started again under the eyes of innumerable onlookers who marveled at the heavenly chariot. And these gods were never squeamish. The terrestrial rulers supplied the heavenly beings with gold and diamonds. In return, they were protected. Thereupon, Horhut flew up into the firmament in the form of a large sun disk with wings attached. When he saw the enemies from the heavenly heights, he charged upon them with such might that they neither saw nor heard him. Within a short period of time, no living head existed any longer. Horhut, shining in many different colors, returned to the ship of Ra Harmachis in his shape as a large winged sun disk. There is no shortage of stories about flying vehicles in antiquity. The busy critics have no idea about this. King Solomon gave his lover, the Queen of Sheba, a flying chariot. He gave her all the splendors she could wish for, and vehicles with which to drive on land, and a chariot which flew through the air, which he had made in accordance with the wisdom given him by God. We even know about the speed of Solomon's flying chariot. The king and all under his command, they flew on the wagon without sickness and suffering, without hunger and thirst, without sweat and exhaustion, covering a distance of 3 months in one day. These were facts recorded thousands of years ago. That our busy Egyptologists and Sumerologists turned this into legend is understandable. The zeitgeist was not yet ready for the logical consequences. But meanwhile, the links can be shown. Exegesis, the interpretation, is no longer isolated to a geographical religion. Myths are the most sublime expression of the most sublime truths, and much more. They are the primordial history of humanity, according to Professor A. Volheim 140 years ago. If we accept as a factor in even just one example that gods equal extraterrestrials, all the creation myths abruptly make sense from Greece through Polynesia to the jealous God of the Old Testament. And this simple insight also throws a light on certain construction technologies in ancient history. Once accepted, illumination passes around the world. Even the soil of Kiev, the capital of Ukraine, was the landing site of the god Perun thousands of years ago. Starokievska Hill lies in the center of Kiev. Until the 19th century, it had a religious building in honor of Perun, who long ago descended from heaven in a pillar of fire in precisely this place. Like Zeus in Greece or Odin in Germania, Perun was deemed to be the god of lightning who drove around the earth in his heavenly chariot. Originally, the sacred site for this flying god comprised an area of 10,000 meters squared. This has been shown by archaeological investigations in Kiev. Most of these ancient sacred sites were destroyed with the advent of Christianity. This happened almost worldwide. We are quite well informed about the heavenly beings who came from the cosmos in silver and golden eggs in the pre-Inca period. Both in South and Central America, priests traveled to the newly discovered lands soon after the first conquerors. Their job was to bring Christianity to the native peoples. But the bearded and not very pleasantly smelling ecclesiastics also noted what the indigenous inhabitants were telling them about their gods, written down more than four centuries ago, when flying was not yet occupying our minds. There were reports about golden and silver eggs out of which came the teachers, the heavenly nobles. The Spanish chronicler Pedro Simon writes that a priest from the Chibcha tribe told him the following about the beginning of all things. It was night. There was still something in the world. The light was locked up in a large something hut and emerged from it. This something hut is Chimini Gagwa, and it contained the light within itself so that it would come out. Then things began to be. The Chibcha are a tribe in the highlands and the valleys of the eastern Colombian Cordillera. Logically, they had no understanding of extraterrestrial technology, so the spaceship became a something hut. No different than distant Easter Island, the primordial gods were venerated as masters of the universe. They include Makemake, the inhabitant of the air. His symbol is the egg. And the same thing exists thousands of kilometers away in the highlands of Tibet. The so-called books of Kanshur and Tanshur tell clearly about pearls in the heavens, as well as shining glass spheres from which the gods emerged. Kanshur and Tanshur are not actual books, but folios in which the sacred texts of Lamaism are recorded. The term Lanshur means translated teaching, and is a commentary on the Kanshur. No one knows their original age. The similarities in the content of sacred books is always intriguing, although their authors could not know anything about one another. So the Inuit say that their great-great-grandfathers once came to present-day Alaska in flying houses, and the Tungus, a tribe in Siberia, claim their first divine couple had descended from heaven in a silver gondola. That is precisely how it was recorded by the famous polar explorer Fridtjof Nansen in his book The First Crossing of Greenland. The work was published in 1891, once again a time when aircraft were unknown. It is the same across the world. In ancient Egypt, Nun was seen as the endless ocean of stars from which the primal god Osiris had once arrived in a golden ship. Just like the gods, his spouse Isis descended in a silver bark from Sirius to human beings. Osiris and Isis, the heavenly couple from Orion and Sirius. It was no different in Nippur, the millennia-old Sumerian city. The place is called Nufar today and lies about 180 kilometers southeast of Baghdad. It once had step pyramids in honor of Enlil and Ninlil. Like in Uruk, tablets made of lapis lazuli, lapis is a blue, shiny mineral, were also found in Nippur, which praised the two gods because they maintain the bond between heaven and earth. Why then is there something similar in the Finnish national epic Kalevala? God knows the far north has nothing to do with Baghdad in the south. The Finns refer to a flame bird which brought wisdom from heaven and was also involved in fighting in the firmament. We can leap around the globe. Cultures that have never met, never heard of one another, report about similar events which, without exception, took place in a dark age when there was not yet any writing. Just being surprised about that is not enough. We have to draw the conclusions. Human beings experienced the arrival of their primal gods from the cosmos. Once there was writing, their memories migrated to clay tablets, palm leaves, and wooden boards. Later they turned into stone sculptures. The experiences of the venerable ancestors were to remain unforgotten forever. Thus they grew to become an element of the cultural heritage, the religions, and were celebrated in folk dances or priestly song. The powerful impact of the past, the mystery of the heavenly teachers, was never to fade from memory. After all, those gods had promised to return one day. Nothing surprises me any longer. The gods were visitors from alien solar systems. What else? In Exodus, the descent of God is described in the following words, "And Mount Sinai was altogether on a smoke, because the Lord descended upon it in fire, and the smoke thereof ascended as the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly." Exodus chapter 19, verse 18.